be back again someday.
He will come back someday, if we believe.
Journalist, TV producer, novelist, and 21st century Newcastle man. It's Ian Lennox.
Yay! You're not Frosty the Snowman, are you, Ian?
No,
exactly. Yeah, quite likely so, too. Okay, moving
you know
on.
What, I'm once been the stage for my children. It didn't snow for about 8 years up here.
Yeah, well, you see, it's just a myth, a mythology of this whole system. Dave Milling has actually sent in an email saying, can we please talk up his live transmission on Sunday? In this week's show, he's going to be featuring entertainment expert Ant-Man. I thought he was a superhero, actually, never mind. Who will be talking about the world's worst Christmas songs. Why not focus on the best, surely? You know, I would have thought Partridge Family and Frosty the Snowman should be in the best.
There's probably more of them, you see.
There'll be advice from top European neuro-linguistic programming experts about how to avoid the stresses and strains of Christmas, pretend it's not happening, and the festive period. And they'll also be including details as to how to tell someone tactfully that their gift may not be all that good. One thing I don't like, I mean, I don't rant usually, and I'd like to step away from that, but I'll share it with the team as well. We have Gabriella Peralta for another few moments before you get whisked up to Barney Chowdhury and the rest of the fine team. He's already passed the spy, actually.
Oh, has he? I didn't even know.
That's because you're focused on the show,
yes,
Gabriella.
Exactly.
Focused on the moment, which is how it should be, really, as with all great athletes. Live in the moment and work with her. We have making her debut Rachel Warren and, of course, Katie Grimerson is with us. But I do think that if you get a Christmas gift and put it on eBay within hours on Christmas Day, that is not good form.
No.
There we
that's
go.
That's terrible.
It's the one thing I'd say, just don't do that. Sorry, Ian, to sort of bite into your sort of time on that sort of basis. Yeah. I just said that's not on. John Wenham's Christmas Diary, of course, coming out in all sorts of ways. We've got Britain's Ceremony of Carols. That's Benjamin as opposed to Great. Of course, Benjamin was great, but that's by the by. Britain's Ceremony of Carols performed by the Cathedral Choristers in aid of the Lincoln Cathedral Music Fund this Saturday, the 14th of December at 2 p.m. For 1 hour. That makes it up to 3 p.m. And the choristers will be accompanied on the harp by Maxine Moulin-Rose, who plays throughout Cheshire, Lancashire, Manchester, Cumbria, the Wirral, North Wales and West Yorkshire. Again, a little history here with respect to possibly Ian and John Wenham. The Ashes. Sort it out, guys. Sort it out now. Okay? It's not good being 2-0 down. It's just outrageous. All right. Gabriella, questions for Ian about life, the universe, advice he might have on your documentary stuff that you'll be doing with Barney in a few moments.
Well, yes, I'm doing a documentary about Muslims in the EU, in the UK, and it's based on an EU kind of perspective on freedom of religion. And
I couldn't catch that.
Basically, I'm doing a documentary about Muslims in the UK.
Yes.
And the EU kind of freedom of religion, is it really being upheld in the UK? What are we doing about it? You know, people being discriminated for their religion. So, what would you recommend me to do?
Scientologists have now accepted religion, according to the latest ruling in the UK. Never mind. Yes, how would you take that one, Ian? Wearing your documentary filmmaker's hat, tying to yourself, what would you advise Gabriella to do?
If I was doing that sort of work, the first thing I would look at would be how we have difficulty accepting different customs between each other. It's not so much the religions, or even people's colour or anything like that causes dissension. I don't think it's when they have some groups of people have very strong ideas about certain activities, and they're not accepted by other groups, and there's a sort of tribal difference then develops. And I think that is the way I would go at that. For instance, there'll be some practices that some religious groups have that are alien to our way of thinking.
Yes, yeah.
And that's where the problems start. And if you're brought up and conditioned to think a certain way by the society in which you live, it's difficult for you to accept criticism from outside. So So there's a potential dissension starts because of that. That's what I would do anyway.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
As ever, sage words of wisdom.
And if you get a fail because of that, don't blame me.
That's the disclaimer.
I hope I won't.
Really. No, of course not. You'll be celebrating the whole thing. Congratulations, Ian, to your team for doing a fantastic job last weekend and the first to win at Old Trafford since the 1970s, actually. So well done.
72, I was there.
Well, you see,
I was actually on the Daily Mail in Manchester and I went to that game.
Yeah, so it was a long time, but I think the right result, which is well done, ever since the watch from that point of view. So life continues in its own merry way. Rachel, any questions you might have for Ian Lennox about his work as a writer, he's a producer. In fact, I might let you borrow one of his wonderful texts. He's produced things like The Net. He's produced The Brothers, of course, his latest Gentlemen and Players. He's shifted all sorts of gears from that point of view. Again, quiz away.
Oh, I'm really sorry. I don't know much about what you've written.
Well, that's where we can find this out, because we did promise him last week, you know, this would be the chance for Ian to plug his book shamelessly. Previous weeks we said, we'll talk about the book, then we've just gone off on a whole range of sort of factors. So I thought, this week we've got a third-year English student in the whole base, you know, reading admittedly a whole range of things, passion for Fringe, the movie, etc. And Ian, she's originally from Bury St Edmunds. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, no. It's as exciting as Erdington in many ways.
That's not quite
as exciting. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Bury St Edmunds, Erdington and Gibraltar, all represented on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. You can't get much more international than that. Anyway, questions for Ian, Rachel.
Okay, so what's your favourite thing you've written then?
In terms of thinking of the best bit of writing I did, it's either... a book called The Brothers, which is about two boys who grew up in a rural community before the First World War, and one went to fight in the front and one went to live in the wilds when the war started. That's how they both tried to survive.
It's heartrending, actually. I should pass that as heartrending book.
I think you've read that one, actually, haven't you?
Yeah, I've read them all. Ian.
Oh, have you? Oh, well done. Yeah. You're probably the only person in the world.
Oh,
done that,
come now.
And the latest one I've got, which is I've just got up on Kindle, actually. And that I was very pleased because it's had on Kindle, on Amazon Kindle, it's had 12 reviews and. I think 11 of them are 5 stars.
Yeah.
Ooh, well done.
So,
all about cricket in the 1930s. But is it all about cricket? No, it's about the class system. Is it about the class system?
It's about
their love story. It's just wonderful. It's like genre blending in every sense of the word. Anyway, I've just had a wonderful note which actually says, hey, running late, walking over now. That's magical social networking, Gabrielle.
Yes, that was me.
Genius.
Had so much fun at the party last night, couldn't get up this morning.
Yes, Ian, it was indeed the Midweek Drive official Christmas celebration that we had yesterday. Did you used to have such things at Tyne Tees Television when you were sort of there? Did you have any Christmas parties, or was it a case of...
Oh, yes.
Did you really?
Yeah. I once we had legendary ones, especially also when I was in Manchester. On the national papers, there was a national paper whose staff were well known for drinking.
Really?
Journalists? They had a party which still echoes around Manchester, I think. Apparently, the landlord kicked them out of the pub, so one of them set fire to the Aspidistra. And the police were called, and one journalist with dogs, apparently, and one journalist got down his knees and started barking at the police dog, apparently. So. That sort of thing went on. Yeah. But I was young then.
We have a text from Ed Wellman. Good morning, team, he says. Poorly aired. Oh, no. Not gone to Essex. Sore throat, no voice, wrapped up in blankets, Lemsip and Midweek Drive. Well, one of those is going to help cure him. I don't think this would be the Lemsip. No, obviously other brands are available.
I hope he likes my Christmas card.
I'm holding it here, actually. He looks at my Ed Wellman. It's wonderful. Small and perfectly formed. Much like yourself, Katie. Anyway, are you ready for the official Leslie Curtis selection that Cameron Tilbury has brought for us to listen to this week, Ian?
Yes.
Yes, right. Now, Gabriella, is this the time when we have to say farewell as you head up to the top floor?
Yes, it probably is.
Well, yeah. I'd hate you to be late for a fellow academic sort of scenario on the whole sort of system. Have you enjoyed your participation in the show so far?
Yes, I have today, yeah.
Of course, next week you might be able to stick around for the whole one, basically, the whole morning show. But you'll be back on the Wednesday, I presume.
Yes, definitely on the Wednesday. Not too sure on
Thursday,
Thursday.
Not too sure. Deadline day. Deadline day. And Ian,
difficult.
As we all know, with respect to journalists and deadlines, they never make them. No.
I always do, most of the time.
That is because you are the girl from Gibraltar, Gabriella Peralta.
Yeah.
Here's Leslie Curtis. Of course, she actually wrote that, as you know, Katie, as we found out yesterday, Leslie Curtis wrote Wait Another Day because she was challenged to write a song about the A604.
Oh.
Exactly. And to prove that you could do it, that's what she came up with. That puts a whole new, fresh take on Jeff Thompson's travel routine. You know, I think we should actually put that forward, that every time Jeff and Ian put the travel news into the system on Siren 107.3 FM, somebody writes a song about it. Would you think that would be good, Ian?
A lot of songs.
Yeah,
but
you know,
a pretty good song, I thought.
Well, exactly. It was a splendid little tune to work out. Yeah. What did we make of that, Rachel? It's the first time you'd heard Leslie Curtis perform that particular gig.
It was good.
All right, there we are. Good. Yeah. It's been sharing notes with respect to academics that have taught both Katie and Rachel. Can't broadcast any of it, sadly. But there we are. No, it's just certain things. You just, as you know, when the microphone's off, you just can't open it up again and talk it. It would set up all sorts of challenges from that point of view. Okay, we're going to try and squeeze in a little interview with a children's author before we go up to the news at 9 o'clock, which means crucial time here, Katie. Do you think she's ready? Do you think Rachel's ready to ask those last two questions? You might have to coach her.
No? I think so.
All right, okay. Rachel, you need to ask two critical questions now to Ian Lennox. These could be, you know, think Anna Torv in the kind of alternate dimension of a Fringe in terms of your motivation for this. And then just deliver those last two questions in your own style. Rachel Warren, over to you.
Oh. What, questions about Fringe, we say?
No.
Don't think I am.
Katie, your help is needed here. You know, what's the first question?
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link?
Now, Rachel, there we are.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, nice.
Good. And can we look forward to talking to you soon, next week?
Certainly can.
There we are, you see. It'll be the last one of 2013, of course, Ian, and we can reflect on all sorts of goodnesses and things, and indeed more good news. And maybe England might have actually scored a few runs in the cricket as well. Outrageous. Oh, it's the 90-mile-an-hour bowls that you have to watch out for. So LDRs, long-distance relationships, something which new technology might help, it might hinder, who knows what's happening. But apparently social media nevertheless plays a huge part in making or breaking long-distance relationships. To address this, we're delighted to welcome from Relationships Charity 1+1, the fabulous Hannah Green. Good morning, Hannah. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you.
And from the student room, the ever-growing wonderful world of the studentroom.co.uk, Jack Wallington. Morning, Jack. How are you? Well?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Okay, so Hannah, let's come to you first. A third of couples in long-distance relationships believe that Facebook, the dreaded F word, has played a part in their breakup. Presumably it's a mixture of selfies and people having such a wonderful time.
Indeed. This is a third of couples who have actually broken up. It played a part in. But yeah, I think the problem is things can be misread on Facebook and Twitter. So you see pictures of your partner having a good time with a mystery blonde draped around their shoulders, and you get the wrong idea.
I don't know how that could possibly actually sort of emerge.
We think it's kind of a lack of communication. So sometimes, you know, you see all these things and your partner hasn't told you about what they're doing. We're really encouraging young people, you know, to talk to each other, tell each other what they're doing. I mean, a relationship works on the small details. And it's really important that you're telling your partner those small details. And then when they see things on social media, it will make much more sense and fit into the things that they already know.
It's really all down to communication, isn't it, really, in terms of getting that message across and ensuring that if you are good friends and you sort of have a connection from that point of view, that actually maintains no matter whether you're 2 miles away or 2,000 miles away, really.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that long-distance relationships have as much chance of surviving universities as those where the couple are close together. So it really is a matter of just really good communication and having good relationships.
Jack, students have been notorious over the years for having, a range of, serial monogamies in various relationships, etc. Is that something which you're faced with sometimes where you have to almost provide a bit of counselling in terms of relationships and this whole notion of long-distance relationships in particular?
Yeah, I think so. I guess what people say is that the stereotype of students always wanting to sleep around is not true of everyone.
Well, absolutely, yes.
So I think we found that 90% of students who go into long-distance relationships don't think it's okay to sleep around or to cheat on each other, and because of that they don't. But yeah, it is a problem. Things do happen. It's real life out there for students. It's their first experience of being away from home, and they do need support. And one of the best things is just to talk about it. So either with their partner or with other people who have been through it. So online communities like ours, it allows people who from all over the country with similar situations to talk to each other about it, and just advise each other and support one another.
And certainly there's a time where students, if they're heading off to university for the first time and they've been in a committed sort of sixth form relationship or whatever, it might be young love, it might be the one major thing. That's presumably something where the studentdream.co.uk can provide advice as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what it's all about, really. So it's about people going away for the first time. Whatever issue they have, whatever support they need, they can get it on that site.
1.3 million members. Astounding. But still, life continues. Back to yourself, Hannah. In terms of the way in which we can look at social media as being a friend to relationships, and obviously we're looking at Twitter and Facebook and so on, modern communications and so on, it's interesting to see that more than 8 out of 10 students who are actually surveyed in a long-distance relationship would use texting and WhatsApp at least once a day to stay in touch with each other, with just under half admitting to sending intimate pictures or doing naughty Skype. Goodness me. from that particular perspective, is that a way in which the technology does help to connect people?
Yeah, I think technology is really helping people nowadays. You can always just send your partner a quick text message just to say, I love you or something, and that's really meaningful. But we're also sort of encouraging people to be very careful. Things like sending text messages.
You don't want to go public with some of those things, certainly.
Well, yeah, you might really trust your partner at the time, but then
10 years down the line, who knows what could happen?
Exactly.
Indeed. Always advise caution with respect to that. Hannah, what would be your best advice in terms of somebody who's listening to this, and they might be heading off to university for the first time, they might be at university, might have spent their first term, or they might be sort of breaking up with all sorts of other areas. Or, I suppose, the reverse of it, what happens when students actually graduate from university and then they think, well, one person's working in Los Angeles, the other person's working in Paris?
Yeah, well, I think there's a number of things. First thing to say is that long-distance relationships can work, but they also need work. And it's really important to think about your values and what you both want. So, as Jack said, our survey found that only people who expected to cheat did cheat. Nobody who didn't expect to cheat cheated. So, think about what you really want. Is this important to your identity? And if it is, then, go for it. Give it a try. But while you're there, make sure you communicate. Make sure you're sensitive. Make sure you're talking to each other. And the final advice we'd give is that things do change. People change. And it's okay if you realise that relationship isn't what you want anymore. But if you realise that, end it well. Don't do it in a text message. That's just really mean. Go and see the person, break up well.
I think that's very sage words there. Of course, 197 students surveyed, either currently in a long-distance relationship, LDR, or indeed had been in one and had broken up. 1+1, the web address, of course, 1+1.org.uk, or indeed thecouplesconnection.net, or thecoupleconnection.net. Both useful if people are wanting to find out further detail and want to drill down a bit more in terms of this, Hannah, presumably.
Yeah, thecoupleconnection.net is the key place for people to go. It's got all sorts of articles and advice for people at all stages in their relationships. So that's a great forum, and you can also talk to people on the listening rooms, talk to trained counsellors who may be able to give advice as well.
OK, we'll wrap up with those two standard questions. First of all, Hannah, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
It's been lovely, thank you.
And Jack, same question for yourself.
I've enjoyed it a lot, thanks.
Brilliant, and can we hopefully look forward to connect with you again in the not-too-distant future? It's not so much a relationship, it's more a kind of, you know, wonderful word of exchange of information, really. Will you return, Hannah and Jack?
Indeed.
Yes.
There we are, Hannah Green, relationship charity, OnePlusOne, and Jack Wallington, Director of Community at the Student Room Group. We salute you. Marvellous. There we are. Off they went with their own advice for long-distance relationships and social media. OK, in the next hour of the programme, we still have the fabulous Rachel Warren and the equally fabulous Katie Grimerson with us in the studio. We're also going live, hopefully, to William Sitwell, if he's up in time. We've also got David Schowler, the show director for Who Do You Think You Are Live. We have Peter Brophy, our rabbit specialist, and maybe, just maybe, a little int of a children's author as well. All this and more on the East Midlands Radio Station of the Year. Siren 107.3 FM, coming up the news from the Sky News Centre.
I'm Angela Rippon and I'm with Alex Lefchuk on Siren FM.
Thank you very much. The high today, it'll be 8 degrees centigrade. It's going to be a rather misty start, but it will be getting drier with bright spells and broken cloud. Now, very exciting time because not even the great man himself knows about our presentation gift to you last night, Katie.
Oh, I thought he did.
Well, he will today. But this is one of the reasons why we are delighted to welcome the main guru of gourmet quality back to the whole sequence with his fantastic John Brown bass, etc. Of course, referring Rachel to the fabulous William Sitwell here. You know, it's very good. I can tell you're very impressed. First show from Bury St Edmunds, and we have the William Sitwell online. William, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
What we have actually produced, yep. And we've got one for you as well, actually. So we've a limited edition of two of these sort of routines. Katie, would you like to share the little prize we gave you last night at the official midweek drive Christmas social we had after the show?
Yes, it was a mug.
A
with
mug.
A picture of me and you on it.
With William and Kate, William Sitwell and Katie Grimerson, holding the William Sitwell book as taken in the atrium of the University of Lincoln. You have now been immortalised, William, and we have your version of this all set and ready to go. There is a photograph up on Facebook. We will tag you in it. Isn't that a joyous way to start off a Thursday morning?
Yeah.
I just think it's time to keep the branding going in every sense of the word on that sort of basis. It's another leap forward from that point of view. But do I detect you might have been socialising a wee bit yourself, sir, in terms of... Because obviously we had to change around your time because we're going live to the director of Who Do You Think You Are Live? That would be David Schowler later on. And you kindly sort of agreed to work for this, but you said, if I'm awake or if you're up...
So, yeah, I'm just about awake. Mm-hmm. What do they say? Late but tidy.
Nice. Yeah.
Like I've that. Emerged.
Very
no,
good.
It is. Well, to be honest, I think it's quite pedestrian to sort of gorge yourself and drink huge amounts in December. I try and do that in April.
Nice.
But there are still people who do it, and so one has to tag along. Right. So there's been there was a Christmas lunch I went to at the Hind's Head in Bray, which is Heston Blumenthal's pub. That was Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Then yesterday I took my team, who produced Waitrose Kitchen magazine, Britain's fastest growing food title, world's most beautiful food magazine.
There
I took them to this amazing Greek restaurant off the Harrow Road in London. It was my favourite sort of place. I'm going to do a review of it today. It's called, I don't know, I can't quite pronounce the word. It looks like psoriasis. But I think
not the best title for a restaurant. It has to be said, really. You know, no. I mean, that's
but it's
honest.
Like a kind of, it's a 17-year-old Greek restaurant, and it's my sort of perfect place. You sit down there, you get just plates of salads and tzatziki and chickpeas, and then they brought us plates of grilled chicken on skewers, and then they brought us plates of lamb that had been cooked since dawn. Then they brought us plates of sea bream, and then we just sort of played Secret Santa and fell about.
Which sounds like almost as much fun as we had, Katie, doesn't it, really, in many ways?
I find that very hard to believe.
It's very true. No? I mean, Ed Wellman had so much fun. He's poorly this morning. Well, actually, he was not really on top form last night. He did actually organise the whole thing. Nikki Wells, of course, is... Well, Lord knows what's happened with Nikki, basically. She's there. Her husband, John's probably obviously sort of sorting the remnants out from that particular area. And Gabriella, well, she's now off sort of filming as well. So it's all great stuff on that point of view. Anyway, Rachel, welcome again to the show. Your second hour, first one all wrapped up, etc. William always loves to sort of deal with newbies to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition because he has a wonderful sort of way.
No thanks to you.
No, please, please. It's important part. What are your views on culinary delights, Rachel? Are you a foodie at all? Or is it a case of, well, you are a third year English student, so if you focus on key things here?
I have to say, I do enjoy my food. I do like to go out for lunch and things, but cheap and cheerful at
cheap
the moment.
Cheap and cheerful. Cheap and cheerful. And
yeah, that was that's psoriasis and charcoal. Cheap and cheerful. So, Rachel, you're here to kick out Katie now that she's been given her retirement mug, right?
Yes, William, I wasn't going to break that to her. But, you know, it's always that sort of carry on, Rachel.
No, it's just my first time. It's a bit different. It's quite exciting.
She's saying that, as I say, as a student originally from Bury St Edmunds, of course. Which I didn't have. Have you ever been to Bury St Edmunds, William? Or is that a case where we say Bury St Edmunds and why haven't they yet? Sorry, I won't use that line again. But
No, I've always managed to avoid Bury St Edmunds. Hmm.
Avoid
it? It's a very dangerous place.
No.
So Rachel, why wear your hat now as Bury St Edmunds tourist officer? Why should William Sitwell, our writer extraordinaire and indeed aforementioned editor of Waitrose Kitchen and Marvellous Things, why should he actually make his way to Bury St Edmunds?
It's a lovely little town. There's a abbey that's really nice. It's a very historical town. There are some nice restaurants there too. Oh. So,
there you go. Sounds like
a Daniel. Of course, Daniel Defoe loved it, didn't he?
Yes.
Because he wrote a town famed for its pleasant situation and wholesome air, the Montpellier of Suffolk and perhaps of England. I can't believe you didn't. Those words didn't trip off your tongue, Rachel.
I know, I'm sorry.
and she being an English undergraduate as well.
Yeah, I know, shameful.
I really did think that was the line there. William, as we prep for Christmas and festivities, obviously we've still got one more feature, hopefully, to run with next week on the Midweek Drive. Is this a case of any advice that you actually have to deal with stress and anxieties and such like, or just a case of, well, just keep sipping the wonderful three C's, a great cider, which will help everything over the Christmas period? It's just been shameless plug after shameless plug on this link, I find, but never mind.
I think that if you're stressed, you should start thinking about doing more for other people. And here's a way. There's a brilliant thing called the Mince Pies Against Poverty. And people across Britain are cooking mince pies in order to help raise money for the Kids Company and Food Cycle. And I'm going to be cooking a mince pie for the Mince Pie Project tomorrow. They've raised £22,235.19 at the moment. You know, the idea that when I came back from Ethiopia last week, where I saw extreme poverty and people living, you know, sustaining themselves with the little plots of land they have and threshing the corn by hand and using forks made out of sticks, you know, people walking miles, 6-7 hours to market, people walking to school for 40 minutes, an hour a day, there and back, people, you know, literally walking, going to school with rags. And then you come back and people are talking about angst and stress because they're facing Christmas. You know, just give each other small presents. Don't send more than a fiver. Make some mince pies for poverty and stop whinging.
Very sage words. I think once again, he's put the finger on the pulse and nailed it, to mix metaphors. I've gone almost Alan Partridge-esque in that particular line, but still, never mind. One thing I realised we haven't had in 2013, of course, was the official Midweek Drive bake-off, because that was such a crucial part of 2012, and yet it just hasn't happened in 2013.
Well, a whole year's gone by, no bake-off.
Exactly.
I've done one in my accommodation was doing one.
Right.
So you entered it as a flat.
You took the idea and you basically used it without the Midweek Drive.
But I haven't been baking.
Oh, no. Well, then, Rachel, are you? I mean, do you actually cook at all?
I'm not a very good cook. My housemate is. She makes a lot of very good cakes, so I participate in the eating of them. But
yep. So there we are. It looks as though we're obviously heading into 2014 before we actually sort of start restoring that particular side of things. Katie, don't worry. I'm sure there'll always be a place for you in some way, shape, or form within the whole system, no matter how good Rachel gets on the whole package. And Ed will always defend you. Would you like to throw those last two questions to William Sitwell, please, before we go to Robert Barringer-Locke, the time waster? And I quote directly from the time waster audio drama here. I don't waste time. I waste criminals.
Yes, William, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Well, it's been quite disturbing. I'm a little bit worried about you're going to climb into your mug and spend Christmas in there, yeah, right?
No. Can we look forward to connecting with you next week?
I don't know. whatever.
Yeah. Always on the nose, on the ball. That's William Sitwell. Exactly so. William, we salute you.